Rockets land near an oil field in a military facility housing U.S. forces in Syria. Palestine denounces international silence in the face of Israeli settlement plans, evictions, demolitions, and seizures of Palestinian property. And Europeans angered by lockdowns and vaccine mandates occupy the streets in several countries. To have you with us. A U.S. military base comes under rocket attack in Syria's eastern province of Deir al-Zor. According to local media, multiple rockets were fired at the Al-Omar oil field overnight. The field is home to one of the U.S. military bases in Syria. No word on any possible casualties. The attack reportedly caused fires that were contained by American troops on the ground. The U.S. forces then struck back at the location from which the rockets had been launched. American drones also began flying over the oil field following the strike. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry has lashed out at the global community for remaining tight-lipped in the face of Israeli atrocities. The ministry says that silence over Israeli settlement activities and the Judaization process in Al-Quds are a complete disregard for the two-state solution. It says settlement projects are basically concentrated in and around East Al-Quds, and will eventually lead to the isolation of Palestinian neighborhoods there. Meantime, Israeli forces have arrested some 100 Palestinians during anti-occupation rallies in the Negev region. Anti-Israel demonstrations began in Negev 4 days ago and were marked by Israeli crackdown on protesters. Now, we've spoken to Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Gamsiya, and he tells us why there has never been a two-state solution to begin with. Let's take a listen.
Well, there was never a plan for a future Palestinian state. A two-state solution, so-called, is not a solution. It's a delusion, and it's an illusion that was instituted by Ben-Gurion in the 1920s. And since then, he and his descendants have used this idea of talking to Palestinians about the two-state situation, but not really implementing it, and the facts on the ground show it. And in any case, there's never a colonial, anti-colonial struggle that ends in a two-state solution.
Now, resistance movements in Lebanon state that the country's economic woes can only be addressed with a strong government in power. We've discussed that issue with our guests in our news review program a short while ago.
Lebanon's Hezbollah and Amal resistance movements agreed to attend cabinet sessions after a three-month boycott amid the country's deepening economic crisis. In a joint statement, they stressed the only solution to the current crisis is to have a strong government that can win everyone's trust. They noted Lebanon is facing an unprecedented economic and financial crisis, the main manifestation of which is the devaluation of the national currency and sharp decline in basic services. Movements have been refusing to attend cabinet sessions in a dispute over the handling of an investigation into the deadly Beirut port blast back in 2020. Hezbollah and Amal also criticized illegal actions of the chief investigator in the case and his legal violations, politicization, and lack of justice. Joining us now for the program is Paul Lurie, former lecturer at Lebanese National University from Berkeley, California, and Eric Wahlberg, author and journalist, joining us from Toronto, Canada. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. Paul, I guess we'll start with you. Right now, after a three-month boycott, Hezbollah have decided to attend cabinet sessions. Let's first address the concerns they had that outside players may be manipulating that probe into that port blast back in 2020. We know there's a serious diplomatic row between Beirut right now and Riyadh, Abu Dhabi, Manama, as well as Kuwait, the Kuwaiti government. Your thoughts?
Don't forget the U.S.
And the U.S. and Paris.
The situation in Lebanon has always been the government functions as a consensus or it doesn't function at all. Any of the various players, of which there are half a dozen major ones and many minor ones, can put a stop to any decision, can take action to prevent actions. Now, the outside player, this is an invitation to interference from outside forces. And the United States is especially, and its allies, are causing problems in Lebanon because of the interests of Israel more than anyone else, but also those of the United States. They want to do away with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is standing in the way. Israel, Syria is standing in the way. Iran is standing in the way of American hegemony in the Middle East. And the first one on the lines preventing, for example, Israeli expansion into the south of Lebanon, elimination of, destruction of the Syrian government and so forth. The first one is Hezbollah. And so they have decided that that's where they're going to find their target and try to eliminate Hezbollah. And so they're putting all this pressure on the other parties in Lebanon to destroy Hezbollah. That's basically where this is going.
Thank you, Paul. Mr. Eric program. Now, Eric, by joining forces, by Amal and Hezbollah coming out of this boycott now, they said that they're doing this because there's a dire economic crisis on their hands and it needs to be addressed. They need to come out of a boycott to hopefully address the economic woes of the country. Your thoughts on joining forces, what they can do to achieve that end? We know that they between the two parties, they represent ministers from all across the political spectrum in Lebanon. Your chances of them being able to do something for the Lebanese people who have witnessed their country losing 90% of its currency value since August of 2019, I might add, and 3/4 of the population slipping into poverty.
Yes, it's a shame, really, that Hezbollah didn't stick with the process. There's been nothing happening since October. And when the country is in crisis and you just leave things festering, they're just going to get worse. So it's about time that Hezbollah came back into the process. And this could, I agree with Paul, the gray eminence behind all of this, of course, is Israel, which is determined to get rid of Hezbollah. And it's apparently signed a deal behind everybody's back to provide gas from the offshore drilling that it's been up to in the last few years. So the idea is to undercut Iran as an influence and, as Paul said, to try and undermine Hezbollah. So it's a very delicate situation now, and I hope that Hezbollah is up to dealing with Israel in its maneuvers, because it bodes nothing good, really, for Hezbollah, although it would be good if Lebanon got some of the offshore gas, which Israel has been pumping out, even though there's been no agreement on whose jurisdiction is, whose gas it actually is, but it's better to see Lebanon getting some of it. But I just agree with Paul. This is a very bad situation, and I hope that Hezbollah can move now and show that it is a force for stability in Lebanon. That's what's really important now. Who is standing up to protect Lebanon's sovereignty?
All right, good stuff, gentlemen. Thank you both for joining us on the program, and stay safe, both of you. Paul LaRue, their former lecturer from Lebanese National University, joining us from Berkeley, California. Mr. Eric Wahlberg, author and journalist, joining us out of Toronto, Canada. And thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Another weekend and yet another round of protests against vaccination and COVID curbs in Europe, and that amid a surge of infections fueled by the Omicron variant. In France, thousands hit the streets of the capital, Paris, to slam President Macron's COVID policies. They're angry at a new government plan to further restrict the unvaccinated people. Once approved by the Senate, the bill will require everyone above 12 to show vaccine passes to enter public places. In the Austrian capital, Vienna, thousands rallied against mandatory vaccination for all that's due to start next month. Also, people in Germany and Italy came out to protest against new curbs. They complained that the measures violate their freedom.
On Saturday, Rome, Milan and Naples, Italy's largest cities, saw protesters railing against the vaccine passports that are now required to access much of public life. The largest demonstration was held in the Italian capital, Rome, where over 5,000 people gathered in iconic St. John's Square to express their anger at the Mario Draghi government's latest COVID restrictions. The new law has expanded the scope of the National Health Pass, which now can only be obtained through vaccination or recovery from the infection. Italy's public transport, restaurants, hotels, museums, gyms and leisure places are required to check the pass before providing their services to the citizens.
We are not against the vaccine. My daughters and I have been vaccinated. Furthermore, we don't hold it against the Italian fellow citizens who got vaccinated. It was their choice and we respect it. We are sick and tired of being considered just numbers for statistics. We are human beings, citizens, with our rights and freedoms.
The organizers of the protest say they are not supporting the no-vax movement, but are very concerned over the socio-economic consequences of the restrictions. Thousands of small and medium-sized companies that make up the bulk of the Italian economy have been forced to shut down due to the coronavirus lockdowns.
Retailers, shopkeepers, everybody knows full well that the new restrictions will hit them even harder. Scientific experts have explained that the vaccine offers partial protection against transmission or of infection from the virus. This green pass is just a way to control us.
Despite Italy recording over 180,000 COVID-related cases on Saturday, the daily number of reported coronavirus infections in Italy has begun to fall in recent days. However, scientific experts say the Omicron wave has not peaked just yet.
On top of the pandemic's socioeconomic effects, Italy is bracing for the upcoming presidential election. Lawmakers will elect the country's next president on January 24, with current Prime Minister Mario Draghi among the contenders. The possibility of a government crisis cannot be ruled out. Max Civili, Rome.
The prospects of a reconciliation between the U.S. and Russia over Ukraine remain bleak following bilateral talks in Geneva. The U.S. is threatening Russia with a swift response if it invades Ukraine. Senior U.S. diplomat Victoria Nuland says that the U.S. plans to inflict very sharp pain on Russia should it attack Ukraine. Nuland says that the U.S. has prepared 18 scenarios in the event of a Russian attack on Ukraine. However, she says that Washington is still open to dialogue with Moscow and intends to respond to its demand for security guarantees. Now, on the other side, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says that Moscow and Washington are on totally different tracks. He says this is disturbing for Russia. Now, those remarks follow meetings between Russian officials and the U.S. and NATO earlier this week. The West accuses Russia of planning to attack Ukraine. Moscow rejects the allegation outright. In the meantime, EU foreign policy chief Josep Borrell is warning of massive consequences for Russia if Moscow gives the green light for an invasion of Ukraine. The Kremlin tells the West that NATO expansion along its borders will not be tolerated. Jerome Hughes reports.
On Friday, EU foreign affairs and defense ministers concluded 2 days of talks, which were dominated by the subject of Russia. They assert Moscow is preparing to invade Ukraine.
Any further military aggression against Ukraine will have massive consequences and severe cost in response. And this includes restrictive measures that will be adopted in coordination with our partners.
Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Moscow's patience with the West has expired. The Kremlin demands an end to NATO's military buildup close to its borders, and any idea of Ukraine joining the alliance to be ruled out. We have been asking EU citizens to give their views on the crisis.
There will always be tensions, as long as people have different views and are standing in their views.
Just communication and dialogue, that always helps.
I mean, Russia has got an enormous nuclear arsenal. We don't. Well, Europe doesn't. So we have to, you know, tread carefully.
I think we don't need any more conflict, no?
They should just find a middle way to live with each other and don't start a war.
We don't need any war. Of course not. We want peace, all of us.
The EU has donated more than 12 billion euro to the Ukrainian government since 2014. A European Court of Auditors report published last September showed how corruption in the country is rife at the highest levels. During their talks, EU foreign affairs ministers also discussed ongoing efforts to try and get the Iran nuclear deal back on track. France's Jean-Yves Le Drian told journalists after the meeting that negotiations in Vienna are moving much too slowly and a decision must be reached. But back to Russia, and the ministers claim they want more constructive dialogue with Moscow. But impartial analysts are asking, how can they be serious amid relentless anti-Russia rhetoric and the ongoing implementation of sanctions? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
That's all for this edition from Tehran.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Welcome back to Aperture. We looked into the life of Muhammad Iqbal from his birthplace in Punjab province of British India, now in Pakistan, to his academic studies in the University of Cambridge. Iqbal was a very learned man who was known for his political ideologies and philosophical theories. He is fondly remembered as a great poet and scholar. The political content of Muhammad Iqbal's poetry is one of the most fascinating aspects of his work. Except for a few poems, his entire poetic endeavor is tinged with a political concern. Fellow Indian Muslims aspire to a better future and guided them on the road to freedom.
The Iqbal's message is addressed only to the youth. He calls them Royal Falcons. As held by Iqbal, the Royal Falcon has five characteristics. Iqbal wants the youth to catch hold of Falcon's characteristics as much as possible. The five good attributes of the Royal Falcon, as seen by Iqbal, are flying high. So Iqbal wants the youth to fly high for sure. The second attribute is keen eyesight. The youth can fly high only if they have keen eyesight. Its third attribute is that it does not build a nest, nor does it follow richness. The fourth attribute, it loves solitude, as it is a source of creativity. The last attribute, as told by Iqbal of the Royal Falcon, is it does not eat the prey hunted by others. Iqbal wants the youth to show these five attributes.
Allama's poetry consists of certain periods.
His poetry was at first as the poetry of the day. He would say at that time, "My Urdu poems are like a building made of clay." Little by little, his Persian poems came into existence. Among the first Persian poems were the familiar secrets and the mysteries of rapture. Such poems end with Javed Name, or perhaps with "What can be done, O Eastern people?"
Gradually, Iqbal changes from a national poet to the poet of the Islamic world. His versified story, The Familiar Secrets and the Mysteries of Rapture, is first translated into English by Reynold Nicholson and published in the region. Years later, his Javedname is translated into German and Turkish in 1957 by those who study Islam, including Anna Marie Schimmel. The book is published in Munich, Hermann Hesse. The German writer and a winner of the Nobel Prize in Literature writes an introduction to Javedname, as requested by the translator. Hesse writes, "Sir Muhammad Iqbal belongs to three intellectual domains. His works are the outcome of these three intellectual domains: Indian intellectual domain, spiritual domain, and Western thought's domain."
There are three groups of Persian poets. The first, those who are absolutely meaning-oriented.
Iqbal, as a poet, is highly accomplished. He has bridged the gap between wisdom and heart.
The second, those who are pedantic. Meaning is absent in their poems. They pay attention to words and nothing more.
His poems touch the reader's sensations. Because they are so meaningful and precede even the thoughts forming in their minds.
The third, those whose poems are full of both words and meanings. From among them, we can name Hafez and Saadi.
Such senses calm mind, imagination, and consequently heart. This is a rare attribute seen in such great poets as Hafez and Rumi. The attribute is common in all Iqbal's poems.
Allama Iqbal has mastery not only over words, but also over various meanings. Meanings which come out of him and are derived from his thoughts. His meaning-oriented poems outnumber his other types of poems, just as Rumi's. Iqbal says, there is no comparison between the melody and me. Speaking is only a pretext. I am pulling the camel, which has no rein.
Allama Iqbal, with a faith in Islam and a reasonable Gnostic faith indicating his deep certitude in God's sovereignty, moves his mind to search for secrets and mysteries of the creation. In his Islamic Gnostic poems and such verified stories as The Souvenir of Hijaz, The Eastern Message, The Familiar Secrets, and The Mysteries of Rapture, he talks about the principles of internal ontology of things and idealization of the existential world. While his thoughts are at the height of their powers, he invites Muslims to solidify familiar philosophy exactly in accordance to monotheism, to bring about a new perspective, a new world view into the Islamic world.
So many memories are related to this house. My father came to live in this house when he was 11. Now, what sort of memory do you want me to tell you?
Talking about Iqbal's thoughts reminds us of the familiar thoughts as his central train of thought. We hear Iqbal saying, to a mullah, a denier of God is an unbeliever. To me, more unbeliever is he who denies his own self.
Just ask, what is Iqbal's philosophy? The answer is, the philosophy of your own. Iqbal's philosophy is in fact the philosophy of one's own, or familiar philosophy. What is familiar philosophy? That you know your origin very well.
Never in my life have I been interested in the world's wealth or posts. I built this very house just to accept my wife's repeated requests. My wife's fate in this house had a different form. Here became a safe place for those in search of their identity. I clearly saw that most Muslims in the motherland had lost their Islamic identity, and to regain it, they need to struggle hard. The house, quiet corner, became a place for those who wish to fly faults of self-belief, something much needed by all.
The house originally belonged to my father, Javed Iqbal. The house title deed had already been issued to my grandmother. Upon the death of my grandmother, the deed was transferred to my father. Allama Iqbal would live here as my father's tenant. He paid the rent to my father every month or every 3 months.
Never did I lose my interest in my native land's people. My best time was when I was among people to see them struggle hard to earn their living. I was inspired by their uproar in the Anarkli district. Loftier than the heavens is the station of man, and the beginning of education is respect for man.
Iqbal lays heavy emphasis on the familiar secrets and mysteries of rapture. Familiarity, as seen by Gnostics, means to entertain the self, to fully know the self. It's a famous statement that knowing the self is meant knowing God. Iqbal emphasized, first and foremost, returning to the self. Search within yourself in order to know the self.
Iqbal invites us to know ourselves before doing anything else. Anything else. We shall heighten ourselves to become a human being, par excellence.
From God's own being, the self got a being so. From God's own show, to self He gave a show. About this shining pearl, I know not where. It could be then without a river there.
Iqbal meant to look carefully at human beings on the one hand and to look carefully at Islamic ideology on the other hand. For that very reason, we see Iqbal describing in detail the Eastern society and the essence of Islamic thought.
Who is a selected man? A selected man is the one who is searched for by God. He is in a form desired by God. God wants that kind of human being. This is possible only if man searches for himself, to train himself in a desirable way, to maintain the self, to try hard to fully understand the self. This way finally leads to knowing well the Supreme Being.
The greatest message of Iqbal, as expressed in his poems, is to know yourself, to turn to your own self, to know the East, not the West.
Signs of going senile can be seen very easily in me. The tick-tock of the clock shows clearly the passage of my life. So quickly pass opportunities. So little time have I to reach the end of the line. Oh, the memory of those days when time's sword was allied with the strength of our hands and unveiled the face of truth. Our nails tore loose the knot of this world. Our bowing in prayer gave blessings to the earth. From the jar of truth we made rosy wine gush forth. We charged against the ancient taverns.
इस घर की तामीर हमारी दादी की ख्वाहिश पे की गई थी पर वो इस घर में
सिर्फ This house was built under my grandmother's wish.
उनकी यहां पे बीमार
But only for 2 or 3 days she lived here.
उसके दिन वो फात पा गई. उसके बाद
She was sick when they carried her in a car. But she survived only for 2 or 3 days.
मेरे वालिद तब 11 साल के थे जब उनकी वालिदा फौत
At the age of 11 my father lost his mother. When my aunt was about 6 years old.
मामूल बना लिया था कि वो दोनों बच्चे वालिद और
My father and my aunt would come here every day to see Alama. Who was lying on this bed. Alama called them and my aunt would come up to Alama and my father would sit on the other side of the bed. This way Alama would feel comfortable.
लेट जाती थी अलामा साहब के इस तरह वालिद लेट जाते थे
मैं उनके चली जाती थी शाम के वक्त शाम होनी तो स्कूल से आके
I usually went to see them after school.
मैंने तो उनको इसी आदत
Alama was always lying on his bed and resting.
मैं पास जाके लेट जाती थी तो वहीं पे सारे मेहमान
I was always beside him.
हर वक्त लोगों
Other people would also go there.
मिलना मिलाना مسلسل جاری رہتا تھا
اس گھر میں کئی لوگ علامہ کو ملنے آ چکے ہیں قائد اعظم محمد علی جناح
Many came here to see him Among them General Muhammad Ali Jinnah Jawaharlal Nehru Muhammad Ali Jauhar and many other intimate friends of Allama
علامہ صاحب اپنے بستر پہ بیٹھتے تھے اور
They would come here just before or after midday to have a chat with Allama about topics like poetry philosophy or any other things
تو یہ علامہ کی زندگی
علامہ spent his last days of life here
وہ اس گھر میں گزرا
I was well aware that the main reason why India went under the yoke of British colonization was lack of knowledge of self and reliance on others self-awareness springs out self-dependence and internal richness know yourself Know your hidden parts, nurture your parts, and create a new world, which will compensate for old shortcomings and soul defects, to pave the way for comprehensive development. It is the self which originates existence. It is self-awareness which gives birth to human values. It is the self which affects existence. What human beings see or intuit is a manifestation of the self through mysteries. The form of existence is an effect of the self. Whatsoever thou seest is the secret of the self.
Iqbal's philosophy is objective and tangible. He pulls down philosophy from the metaphysical world to make it tangible and applicable to common people. Iqbal's philosophy is therefore a practical philosophy. It can be put into practice.
O Muslims, you have to preserve your own self. You must follow God and His book, the Holy Quran. When you achieve success in making your own self, you can resist even the whole world. No one can harm you. What is the basis of survival? Survival is based on making your own self. It is the self, the nature mentioned by Quran. And this is the essence of Iqbal's thoughts. This is what Iqbal means of the concept of self. For that very reason, every member of the Islamic world should know this way of thinking, personally and socially.
Today we see a group of ignorant people who commit, under the name of Islam, the most heinous acts, though they are all against Islamic teachings. In fact, they are all Satan's companions and toys in the hands of those who want to mislead them. About these people, Iqbal says, Europe very well knows how to secure interests. While granting to this, takes a loan of that. It gives sustenance to Satan in a way that leaves perplexed even God.
Nowadays, there are calculated plots against Islam. The enemy is very active to destroy the Islamic world from within. I personally think that we need Iqbal's ideas about Islam now more than ever before. You are simultaneously a learned man, a Sayyid, a descendant of the Prophet. But tell me, are you a Muslim too?
A Muslim is called infidel by another Muslim. It is not a non-Muslim who calls him infidel. It is a Muslim. All problems are created and spread here and there by those who are pursuing only their own interests.
The phrase which brings unity to you all is, there is no God but Allah. As Iqbal says, the key to our unity, salvation, and survival, and a sign of familiarity, is in this phrase, there is no God but Allah. Those who follow this phrase never behead Muslims. Iqbal's basic philosophy is that all of us should be unified. All of us should form one single family. Muslims should get unified to guard the sanctuary. I mean Muslims from the Nile shores to the city of Kashgar.
Iqbal tells us to put aside personal interests and to move into a direction leading to social interests. Put aside your personal interests. Let's talk about our religion, our unity. We will end in success. Just because of his thoughts, Iqbal is living on today. I think so.
Just have a look at the tragic events caused by a group of people who are Muslims in name only, as if there has never been a person like Iqbal. His philosophy has sunk into oblivion, as if Iqbal never lived among us. This is a great sorrow, casting a shadow over all Iqbal's philosophy and thoughts. There is no memory of him anymore. The light of all his great books has gone out. The everlasting letter, the familiar secrets, the secrets of rapture, the Persian songs, what can be done, O people of the East, the route of philosophy in Iran, the Eastern message, and reconstructing Islamic religious thoughts. During his last days, Allama says, as Iran full of unknown meaning, I am unable to endure censurers' sayings. Neither have I any option, nor am I coerced. I am but a living soil, always in revolution.
इसी तरह जब आखिरी रात थी अलामा साहब की तो वो दोनों बच्चे इसी दरवाजे पे आए.
Then came the last night of Allama's life. His two children came to have their last look at him. Allama was still conscious. Someone from Germany had come to see him, a friend of his or his teacher. The German called the two children and hugged them. My father was leaving the room, but my aunt wasn't. She wanted to stay with him for a while.
At the time, I felt I had to stay with Allama and to sit there motionlessly. Our tutor, Aunt Doris, came there to take me with her. I told her, I will stay here at least for a while.
Allama told the tutor,
she knows that this is the last meeting between the father and the daughter. That is why she doesn't want to leave. Let her stay.
She knows this is the last time she sees her father.
And finally, I felt something was going to happen. For that very reason, I didn't want to leave the place.
Early in the morning, Allama passed away. The muezzin was calling out the morning adhan. Here, beside this bed, was standing his close friend, Ali Bakhsh. There were some other friends too, although most of them were saying their morning prayers at the mosque at that time. Back then, the mosque was more like a house than anything else. Friends were there to say their prayers in congregation. After their prayers, Allama passed away. His last words were the two testimonies. Then his soul flew to the sky. I personally suppose people like Allama will come to this world several centuries later.
Allama Iqbal Lahori died at the age of 61 on April 21, 1938, after a life of diligence and hard work. In the last moments of his life, he put his hand on his chest, telling Ali Bakhsh, his man, I have a pain here. And upon uttering this ambiguous, meaningful remark, he bade farewell to the world. Many attended his funeral and accompanied him to his final resting place next to Masjid-e-Shah in Lahore. On his deathbed, Allama composed this song. Does a song gone come back again? No, no, no. Does a breeze come from Hijaz? No, no, no. There finally came to an end all those days of poverty. Does a Gnostic come back a second time? No, 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 no. Allama's thoughts and philosophy will remain with us forever, only if we follow him.
Iqbal was a significant voice in the traumatic history of colonized India. His sensitivity to the plight of his people was sharpened both by his understanding of his roots and his adaptability to the demands of the new colonized world. Politics and philosophy were combined in Iqbal's poetry. Perhaps today, Iqbal's anti-colonial stance can be referred to as neo-colonialism is still plaguing the world. And that's it for this week's program. Until next week and another Aperture, it's goodbye.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of The Lantern. I think this is something I mention on the show very often. And honestly, it's just because it's a reality and a truth of life that we constantly need to be reminded of. That life is fleeting and it's very fragile and it could all be over in the blink of an eye. We're truly and genuinely not promised tomorrow. And that could be frightening and it could be a gift. The gift is in the sense that it makes us cherish the moments that we have, the opportunities that are presented to us. Better. And it could be frightening for obvious reasons. Let's listen to a short story about this matter, about how we've got to take advantage of the opportunity we're given in life. And in all honesty, there's no second chance. We'll be right back.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear friends, we have a nice story for this part. Thank you very much for listening to Lantern. The title of our story is How Do You Want to Be Remembered? More than a decade ago, a man was reading his morning newspaper. To his surprise and horror, he read his name in the obituary column. The newspapers had mistakenly reported the death of the wrong person for sure. He was shocked to read news headline about his death. When he regaining his composure, he read it to find out what people had said about him. The obituary included sentences like, "Dynamite King dies," and "He was the merchant of death." The man was the inventor of dynamite, and when he read the words merchant of death, he asked himself a question. Is this how I am going to be remembered? He asked himself. He decided that this was not the way he wanted to be remembered, and he decided to change. From that day on, he started working toward world peace. His name was Alfred Nobel, and he is remembered today by the great Nobel Prize. The greatest of all the prizes. The Nobel Prize has been honoring men and women from all corners of the globe for outstanding achievements in physics, chemistry, medicine, literature, and for work in peace since 1901. The foundations for the prize were laid in 1895 when Alfred Nobel wrote his last will, leaving much of his wealth to the establishment of the Nobel Prize. What is the moral of the story? It's never late to start over. You may not be able to go back and make a brand new start, but you can start now and make a brand new end.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
There's a hadith that tells us when a servant makes a genuine and heartfelt, sincere repentance toward Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah even commands the angels that have been appointed to keep a record of our actions to forget, to erase, as if it never happened. It it totally disintegrates, evaporates, disappears from the timeline of the universe. And we can start with a clean slate. We can start anew. We can start fresh all over again. And it can be the first day of the rest of our lives. And we have this splendid, extraordinary gift at our disposal. And I don't know why. I mean, I can only speak for myself. I don't know why or that I'm constantly perhaps waiting for the right moment, the right time in my life to make a heartfelt toba, as if it's a house I want to purchase. We can do it every day. In fact, we can do it every day, many times a day. This is how easily we can have access to this restart button and how simple it works. And another point about us making the effort to remake ourselves, refine and reform our lives, is that we won't do it unless we believe down to our very core that this is not going to last forever, and that we in fact are not promised tomorrow, and it all could end in a blink of an eye. Once we truly believe that, once we constantly remind ourselves of that, it is then and only then that we make the effort into creating changes. Because with death comes the hisab, comes the reckoning, comes the questioning of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And that moment, that dreaded moment where we will be held accountable for everything we did and didn't do. Only through being reminded of that will we get motivated and encouraged to correct our wrongs. And I think that this is one of the reasons where a narration from Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam states that whoever remembers death every hour of their life, like literally every hour, 24 times a day, will be among the martyrs of the war of Badr on the Day of Judgment. And that's a big deal. Those were the first jihad martyrs of Islam, whom Allah praises and talks about and glorifies in the Quran. It's not because Islam is a dismal, grim, doom and gloom sort of religion that encourages its followers to constantly think about dying and perhaps being depressed about it. Because a healthy person obviously wouldn't think about death all the time. It's not just the act of dying itself. It's what it represents and what it entails. And the prerequisites to that. Being reminded of death means saying goodbye to this temporary life. Being reminded of death means giving ourselves wake-up calls that this is not our destination, this world is not the purpose, it's just a bridge that we're supposed to cross and get to the other side. We're not meant to linger on it too much or invest on it to an extent where we'd be distracted from our ultimate destination. And all of this can only come through remembering death. And once we do that, we would be more encouraged and inspired to repent, to respond, to reform, to refine, to redo, to restart, and to be a better version of ourselves in order to prepare for what's coming. Wherever you are, think happy thoughts. Today is the beginning of the rest of your life if you choose to press that restart button. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi aman Allah.
أنا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.